Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Hostrasser. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Do me a favor, hit that subscribe button. And if you don't mind, give us a little feedback. Love to hear from you. Also, check out disrupteducation.co. That's where you can find my blog, what I'm going to be doing, where I'll be talking, likely on Clubhouse. Check me out on LinkedIn. There's a lot of different places we can connect. That's the best place to start. On today's podcast, what could go wrong? I have Chelsea Robertson. She was not your typical traditional student. She shares her educational journey and how she became the founder of Leolin Growth. She's definitely an innovative educator who is partnering with those bringing innovation in education to propel their mission forward through strategy and design. Coming up right after the break, we start this great conversation with Chelsea. Hang on, we'll be right back. Are you an individual or business wanting to create an online course or training program, but are overwhelmed with the e-learning process and don't even know where to start? If so, you don't want to miss this free masterclass called Create and Launch a Successful E-Learning Program, Online Course, or Virtual Training, where you will learn the biggest mistake most people make with e-learning, the number one reason most e-learning programs fail, and the three pillars to create extraordinary value for your learners every time, and much more. Get instant access to the free masterclass right now by clicking on the link in the description. All you have to do is sign in and you will get instant access to this free masterclass right now. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to this episode of Disrupt Education. I'm Pete Hostrasser, the host, and thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I've got a great guest today, Chelsea Robertson. How are you?
Hey, I am good. I'm excited to be here. I mean, the name of your podcast alone is like, I don't even care. I'm in.
Disrupt, rogues, mess up, shake up. We're those people in education. It is great to have you here. Can you just kind of give an introduction to who you are and what you're about? And we'll start there.
I mean, yeah, I'm about shaking it up. Kind of my hashtag, my thing is, what could go wrong? Like, why not try? Figure it out. We should at least try it and see what happens. I mean, only fun things can go wrong, right? Right? Or right. At least they'll be funny later if they're not funny now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My background is early education, child development, and I was there for years and years locally and internationally. And then COVID happened. And the school that I was working at shut down, and I switched into full-time consulting. When I was working in schools, I was kind of the one who came in to rebuild something that needed to kind of be put back together, which I love that, because you get to burn it down first.
You're right.
which is, you know, it's fine. It's totally normal. And then you get to rebuild it, and that's really exciting, and I love that. And then when I switched over into consulting, which was not necessarily intentional. It was like standing on a cliff and going, wouldn't that be really cool to jump? And then suddenly someone comes up behind you and goes, wah! And then you're just flying suddenly. And you're like, wow, this is fun. I'm having a great time. But I really am better, like, as I'm falling to the ground, ready to, like, right here. This is the best Chelsea right here. Not really up here. That's like the best version of me that you'll get. So I just kind of jumped in head first and went, what can I do to move education forward? And since then, I've had the amazing opportunity to work with all kinds of ed tech companies, to private schools, to charter schools, to entrepreneurs, to all these types of platforms and things across the world. And I've loved every second of it, mostly because I'm a terrible education nerd and I love policy and systems and things and all of those research, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And other, because educators are the coolest people. So
I have to agree with you there. I mean, we are just cool.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, let's dig into your own educational path, because usually that forms who we are as educators. What was that like, you know, growing up, going through a system? Was it good? Was it bad? You know, what was post-secondary like? Tell us a little bit about your journey there.
I mean, it started out totally normal. I had a really fantastic Tweety backpack and I went to kindergarten and it was a wonderful time. My parents got divorced and then my other parents got divorced. And so there was a lot of moving around of schools, but I was in a traditional education model through ninth grade. And starting in about seventh grade it was at junior high when we stopped moving quite so much and I finally got to settle down to a school. So I was taking pre-AP classes and I was doing all the sports. Like, I was doing all the things that you're supposed to do. I was checking all the boxes that are supposed to be checked, right? Because I love boxes and I love checking them and I love lists and just all the things that come with that. So I was like, if there are boxes, I will check them. Okay. And that's who I was. And so I did all the things that you're supposed to do. It was fine. Then when I got to high school, it was fine. You know, I took AP everything but math, because math should die a slow and painful death. And I refuse to participate in any type of shenanigan that requires like shapes and letters and numbers all at one time, because I don't believe that that's of Jesus. And I believe that that is satanic and I don't want to participate in those types of shenanigans. So I took AP everything because I also wanted to check all those boxes. Mm-hmm. And I was bored out of my mind. I found that it went extremely slow. People asked ridiculous questions and we never got to have any fun. And the worst part of it was passing periods were 7 minutes. 7 minutes, okay? Seven entire minutes. What am I supposed to do with 7 minutes? It takes me 2.5 to get from one class to the next, and then I'm sitting there and I'm staring at what for a full 5-something minutes. And then you multiply that by 8 periods a day. That's a lot of time and just sitting around. That is a wasted time, and I am not down for that. I do not have enough ADD medication for that type of nonsense. So that happened. So then my first 6 weeks into my 10th grade year, I was playing volleyball. I was doing all the things I was supposed to be doing, still checking all the boxes because I love boxes, and as we have learned. And then I started begging my mom, who was a single mom, like, please don't make me do this anymore. Like, please, please, please don't make me do this. And I had my little, like, really cool Nokia phone, you know, that you only put a snake on. And I was like, Mom, please don't make me do this anymore. Like, I am dying on the inside. On the inside, I am dying. And this was before I was even an education rebel. I just knew that I was so sad and I just wanted out. Like, please let me out. Like, let me out. Open the bars, okay? Like, please, release me. And for whatever unknown reason, she agreed. And I was like, I will homeschool myself if you will just not make me come here anymore. Like, please. And she agreed. We still don't know why to this day. I'm like, Mom, why did you? And she's like, I don't know. Just don't ask questions. I'm like, okay, I won't have questions. So she pulled me out. We went to the store, bought like homeschool curriculum. Mm-hmm. I took it home and I would do my, you know, things during the day. It wasn't awesome, but it was, I checked the boxes. Mm-hmm. I went home, I did all my things, I turned it into my mom, she checked it against the answer sheets, gave it back to me, whatever. And I finished all three of the remaining grades by the end of my sophomore year.
Oh, love it.
Because why not? I really honestly believe it's because I didn't have passing periods. Okay. And so I got all of that time back.
So you are good at math. See,
but there are no shapes.
There are no shapes.
There are no shapes in that. So that's what happened. And then I graduated and I moved to Honduras for a while to do a kind of a trip there. And I lived at an orphanage. And when I tell people that I lived at a Honduran orphanage, they're like, were you a Honduran orphan? And I'm like,
where'd your mom go?
I thought you had a mom. I don't know how you became an orphan. I also don't know how you became an Honduran orphan, but I just have a lot of questions. To clarify, I was not a Honduran orphan. I lived at a Honduran orphanage. Mm-hmm. And I taught the Honduran orphans.
Yeah.
And I worked there and I worked on their curriculum, because as you can imagine, public schools in Honduras aren't great. Mm-hmm. And so I would supplement the curriculum there and just work with the kids anywhere from 2 to 18. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for a while. We didn't have running water. It wasn't a lovely time. Bucket showers are not my jam. Learned that about myself. I don't like passing periods and I don't like bucket showers. So if we're keeping a list, oh, and I don't like math that includes
cylinder space. Of the bucket is a shape and too. So we'll just kind of, yeah.
And there was like, how many gallons fit in the bucket? Like I knew there was a word problem in there somewhere and I did not want to participate.
So were you a teenager like in Honduras, like doing this as a teen? Yes. Wow.
When I started going, I was 15. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of came back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And when I was living there, I was 18.
Wow.
And so I was there and then I lived at the orphanage for a while. And then I moved into the city and I worked and lived at a private school. Mm. That was interesting because it was surrounded by like 10-foot concrete walls and barbed wire and a big steel door, a guy with a machine gun, you know, and that was fine. And I lived there and worked there in the kindergarten classroom for a while. And then I came back and started working in the States and here we are.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was a disruptor of education before I even knew what that meant.
I mean, the experiential learning alone has got to be phenomenal there, right? Like, I mean, right. You're seeing culture, you're seeing education in different world. Like you've done more than I have and I'm an old dude, you know, so that's amazing. I love that. Yeah. See, well, yeah, there's no shapes in there, you know, so I just did the math, but yeah, I mean, that is truly amazing. And then you move forward. Now you have Leyland Growth. Can you let's talk a little bit about that. Like that's your consulting area and what, I mean, that's very unique. What can people expect in that? What do you do there? Everything.
Well, I mean, you know, I jump off of cliffs with people. That's kind of the best that people usually come to me when they're like, hey, so I'm standing on this cliff and I really feel like there's something interesting down there, but I don't know that I really want to participate. And while they're mid-sentence, I'm going, and you know, that's my role. But it really has been interesting because I actually owned the domain Leyland Growth for like 3 years before I ever launched it because I had nobody to push me off the cliff and I was happy and I was content directing and I was good at it and whatever. And you know, why bother? But then COVID happened and COVID pushed me off the cliff. Mm-hmm. And so there was that. But the whole point of it was a lot of people kept saying you could go out and start another school or you could go out and start a this or you could start a that, you could start this. And really what I was really going for was I wanted to multiply my impact, not by lifting myself up, but rather lifting others up who were already doing really amazing things. So the concept behind Leyland Growth was how can I multiply my impact by moving education forward in the people who are already doing it?
Yeah.
Why start something brand new when I can just partner with people who are already doing really amazing things? And there are people doing really amazing things.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my basis. Now, to say that I knew what that looked like is absolutely wrong because people will be like, hey, so what do you do? I'm like, I move education forward. And they're like, oh, yeah? What does that look like? I'm like, I don't know. What do you do?
You got to go back to the ground analogy. Well, here's the ground. And
But it's really been, it's evolved over this. It's been 7 months. So it's kind of evolved with all of that. And like I said, I've gotten to work with ed tech companies and I've gotten to work with charter school places and doing all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. Like some of it is we're working on a go-to-market strategy. Some of it is we're trying to get our gen ed and our sped teams to play nice together to get the success of our students to raise. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of it is we want to train people how to create inclusive structures. Can you help us, you know, look at what we're already doing? I mean, so it's just this huge range of things. Because I bore easily, as you might have imagined, and I need like a huge range of things to participate in. But it's really, it's just anything education. I mean, I'm obsessed and I'm a terrible nerd.
No, that's A, you're driven. See, I'm going to just change up the words. Driven and you are just super education savvy. There you go. We'll go there.
I like what you did there.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. You know, I had to do that on all my English papers because I couldn't write back in the day. So yes, it has been amazing. And I think a lot of us rogue disruptors, all these things that we're doing, we're coming together in the time of like COVID when there's a lot of difficulties going on, but it's exposing so many things. So you've already seen this, which is so interesting. I love your story because guess what? I tell high school kids all the time, I bet you could graduate in 2 years if you really just put your head down and did it. And now I can say, guess who did it? Chelsea Robertson did it. And I'm totally going to use your story there because I do, right? And most kids start to burn out. Man, so let's jump into a little bit of opinion. Let's go here, right?
Oh, I love opinion.
If you could check the box in school to change something, or maybe five different things, in a system that's so ginormous, and it's really, you know, there's different cultures and communities across, as you see.
Right.
But what would be one or two main things that you would change, like right now? Like, I'm going to flick the switch and that needs to end and we need to do something like this.
Well, you know, I was just actually talking with someone about my pyramid of soapboxes, right? I mean, some people have like one soapbox, two soapboxes. I have just a pyramid and it's like a never ending and then you just climb up and there's all another one. And so, but the soapbox that carries the weight of all of my other soapboxes would be that everything has to happen from a foundation of relationship or it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so I honestly think if there was going to be one thing that I would go in and say, why are we not focused on this? Here is where we need to put all of our energy and all of our focus. It is in how we're creating positive relationships with the learners, with other educators. I mean, as a learning community, what does it look like to have this positive relationship, this ecosystem of relationships? And you know, studies have shown that resilience, right, is this huge indicator for success. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what the biggest indicator of resilience is positive relationship.
Right.
And so if we know that grit and resilience is this indicator for success, and people love quoting that, then if we keep working backwards, we know that relationship is what builds that to get to that. Mm-hmm. So if we want to get here, we have to start here. And I just feel like this foundation of relationship, of this creating a psychologically safe environment, this trauma-informed space, a sense of belonging. I mean, all of those types of things, all these beautiful words that people like to just throw around and make, you know, these like buzzwords that fly around and then they go back to standardized testing. Right. If we're not doing it from a basis of relationship, if our biggest focus is not on the learner or on the other person, like human, there is a human that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Everything else, it doesn't matter. I just think if we're not coming at it from that point, then the rest of it matters.
That's so true. I can't tell you how many, and I'm sure you see it too, like how many systems you go into and they talk the talk. But then mm-hmm. that's it, right? Like they, you know, I've always said, and I think I have a shirt somewhere around here, it says it on it, is like, you know, teach students before subjects, right? That's really, absolutely. And I'm in secondary ed, and it's a simple ask, I think. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So how do you think we're going to get there? What, obviously COVID has opened up a lot of windows that some people just were blinded to. They just didn't want to believe, in my instances, some of the kids who are at home, I don't require cameras on or anything, but when they ask a question, you can hear voices everywhere. You know, there's more than maybe five or six or seven people in the room. I mean, like, how can you concentrate? There might be different situations going on. So how do you think we get there, or how do you strategize people who are right before the ground? Because I feel like the system is right there, right? And some people are going to say, oh, look at there, there's a rope, I'm going to climb myself back up. Right, and I hate that. I don't want to go back. But have you seen?
I definitely don't want to go back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the simple things, right? Because you can go at it and say, okay, if we're coming at it from a huge level, if we're working with an ISD, and, you know, a huge ISD, and we're saying we're going to make everything from a foundation of relationships, that's hard mm-hmm. to work from the top down, because then you're having to think of the systems and how are we going to change our systems to change our relationship, to change this, change that, right? Then you're going to get stuck in the weeds and you're never going to make it to the bottom. Mm-hmm. But if you start from the bottom up with the simple things like you're talking about, like if a child says, I don't want to turn my camera on, you say, okay. If a child says, I need to go to the bathroom, you say, okay.
Which I've had kids ask that on camera at their home. I love that. I'm like, can you swing by the fridge and just grab me something to drink too? Like, go ahead. It's your home. Like, sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt, but
that's what I'm saying. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be this grand concept that we're never going to reach. I mean, it's these small things of treating the other human like a human, and right. that's what I'm, and respecting their differences, and then allowing for that shift. I mean, there's things that we can't change inside the system. We know that these kids are going to have to take a standardized test. So we know that there are things that they're going to have to understand or know or participate in, you know, or we'll never get funded. That's a different problem. Mm-hmm. But the problem that we can make changes in is if a child is feeling anxious about having their camera on, you say, that's totally fine. Turn your camera off and you find a different way to check in with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're allowing for that. I mean, like my daughter, my youngest, cannot function with her camera on. Mm-hmm. I mean, she just feels like everybody's looking at her, everybody's watching her. She will shut down and nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. And the teachers have said, you have to have your camera on. And then they met me and that was a whole different conversation. And now we're fine. But I mean, but it was because there was, and it wasn't the teacher's thing. It was set up by the school in some different manner and they were following what was given to them. But just having that flexibility or even audacity to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to put the student first here. Mm-hmm. So if you don't need to, if it bothers you to have your camera on, then please turn your camera off and let's find a different way to serve you.
Right.
How can I check in with you? And I think that in the simplest form is the way that we start building relationships inside of the system. Mm-hmm.
Coming up after the break, we continue this awesome conversation. Hang out with Chelsea and I right after the break. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there and share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future. And excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free. Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, we work on our favorite LMS, our learning management systems, right? Yeah. Which there's a lot of great ed tech companies out there that are doing some really cool things. So, but one of the things that I have done is very similar to that is I just give video feedback for each kid, right? So, you know, hey, Joe, you did this well. I appreciate that. I always thank him for turning things in and such. You never get 100%, but you just try, right?
You say thank you to the students for turning in their work?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. What could go wrong? So, yeah. All right. We'll just give the heart here because seriously, like, and I'm like, cause you have to understand, well, you know, but like I'm talking to listeners here. Like you have to understand, think about yourself in their situation. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to do school in my room. Like my own son has told me, like it took him about 4 months to figure out, oh, well, this was my gaming space.
Yeah.
I don't do school here. And, you know,
taking it from me.
Right. And, you know, and we're privileged. So we're just like, yeah, it's not that bad, right? You have a roof over your head. Yeah. There's not people running around and all different kinds of.
You have a gaming space.
Yes, you have a gaming space, right? So, so that's you know, a place there. Talk a little bit about like, you know, your view of equity and how is that whole thing, how is that rolling out in education and what are you seeing out there and how are you helping people with that as well? Because I'll just kind of start that with, preface that with, you know, I've been on Clubhouse and where I start in some of my conversations, I'm just like, wait, I have no idea. And some really just almost unbelievable trauma that's happening. And I'm like, wait, that's still happening? This is 2020. So, Yeah, talk a little bit about like you know, how that's coming into play and what you've seen out there and what you've worked with.
I mean, so a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is in digital equity. I'm a super privileged to get to work with a company that's working inside of Texas to get to kind of work to close the digital divide. Mm-hmm. And with in association with the TEA. And so that has been mind blowing. I mean, just such a huge experience to me because, you know, I've always worked in smaller school settings. I mean, the last school that I directed, we had 240 students, which is small compared to these giant districts, mm-hmm. right? And to sit there and say there's 5 million students in Texas and this giant number of students don't even have a laptop. And if they have a laptop, they don't even have a hotspot. And if they have a hotspot, then maybe they don't have. And if they, then they don't have, I mean, there's 20 barriers just to get to their class.
Yeah.
And when we said, hey, everybody go digital, there was just so many people that were immediately dropped from mm-hmm. their ability to do that. And I think this concept of equity became so much louder mm-hmm. because then we were able to see it, because that now you're looking at not just do you have access, now you're looking at, like you were saying, what does your home environment look like? Do you have assistance? Do you have help? Do you have a special, do you have a learning difference? Do you have a special need? Do you have an IEP? I mean, all of these things became so much bigger. Yeah. The highlight on these differences became huge. And now we're looking at, I mean, there's kids that, there's rural locations, there's schools, there's things like that don't even have Wi-Fi.
Right.
They don't have broadband, that don't have this and that and the other. And so this concept of equity is huge because it covers so many different variables that there's, I mean, to me, to think that there's a school that doesn't have Wi-Fi, I mean, my response is like, it's 2021, y'all. Nice. Like, what are you doing without Wi-Fi? Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand that. And so it's been actually a really good for me to be able to see that, yeah, these things are still happening. Yeah. And then how can I jump in there and do whatever I can to help close all these different gaps? And I'm not going to be able to close all of them, but I really do believe that there's very tangible things that need to be done. There's funding that needs to happen. There's money that needs to be spent. Devices need to be given, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I really do believe that the biggest way that we can push back against this inequity is, again, to go back to how are we building relationships with the students that we're working with and really working with them on a human level. I mean, student to student, individual, or student to educator, individualized,
right?
Not from a larger, you're a student, I'm the educator, and I'm going to treat all of you the same way, because that doesn't work, because they're not all the same student. They don't all come from the same place. They don't all have the same resources and those types of things. And so I really think it goes back to individualizing our approach. Mm-hmm. Is our greatest and most actionable tool for equity that we have in our hands right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, that is the challenge. It's amazing the stories you hear. And sometimes, you know, you speak with school districts, and like I said, on Clubhouse, I'm chatting with people and I'm just like, oh, we lost our internet for half an hour today at our school. And that was crazy. And then all of a sudden you realize, you're like, oh, wait a minute, we got deeper problems than this. Let's okay.
Let's put that
on the side. So, let's turn it up into like, what are some good, what are some cool stories that you have that some successes that you found in this crazy last year, or actually since August 2020, when you started, what are some cool things that you've seen?
I mean, honestly, the things that educators are coming up with, and even non-educators, I mean, people are starting to see these gaps in education, and that sounds like a negative thing, but it's really a positive thing, because now there's light being shown onto it, especially in early education. There's a whole different world of gaps inside of that. But if we're talking primary, secondary, then they have gaps. And I think what I've really loved seeing, and in all of these small, like I call them innovation pockets, right? Mm-hmm. These little pieces here and there of people kind of starting to poke their heads up and go, oh, well, what if I did this? Wouldn't that help with some of these things? And then someone else over here is saying, ah, well, I bet I could do. And so seeing these pop up and doing what I'm doing and just kind of how can I move education forward? But I don't really have an agenda, right? I'm kind of like, are you relationship? Do you value the children? Are you human centric? Then, you know, I'm in, let's do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't have anything that I'm pushing. I don't have anything that I'm selling. So that puts me in a really interesting place to be able to kind of notice these innovation pockets and then connect them and say, you know what? I actually met this guy who's doing this other thing. And if you guys talk to each other, then I think what you're doing, what he's doing could complement. And they're like, oh, well, that's really interesting. And then seeing those work out. And I love being able to come at it from, I have nothing to sell. I mean, I also have nothing to lose. So,
yeah, right, like, right.
You know, it works out really well. That's why what could go wrong is kind of my jam, right? Because I'm not selling you anything except for how we're moving education forward. And I love that because it puts me in a unique place to get to see all of these little pockets of innovation. And I love seeing educators step up and say, I think I could fix that. And also seeing non-educators step up and use the resources that they have and say, you know what, I think I could actually work inside of that too. And getting to kind of put all of those puzzle pieces together in some way and see them start to snowball. That has just been like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. It's seeing these things, like education has always been like, all right, we'll just every 4 years, we'll just throw education out there on the politics and like, all right, here's some cash, whatever.
But only this much.
Yeah, right, right. We're gonna say this much, and then it comes to a little bit. But yeah, it's really is in the forefront. And you know, I've heard the term so many times, and this is one of the things that came out of the pandemic. I somebody said this, so please, somebody like leave a note. And maybe you said it, I don't know, but it was like, we've never had an education, like a business area. We've always had a credential business area. I just call it a business area. It's, you know, I'm totally botching the words, but like, it's all been credentials and not really learning and education.
Right,
so,
right.
I like to see those things come out. I like to see people, really, you know, that's what's so invigorating. That's how we met, like in the middle of this craziness, and which is awesome. I got to ask you, so from Honduras, what is there something you've learned there that you've brought back? Because I know, like, when you see different cultures and stuff and you're seeing what's happening, there's got to be something there that was amazing that you're like, you know what, I'm going to kind of take that and move that and see what we can do here. Is there anything there?
I did learn that I love towels that are dried in a dryer as opposed to towels that are dried on a string because they're crunchy, and towels are not meant to be crunchy. And that is just the big takeaway from all of that. But other than that really life-changing experience, so much of it was, I think it was my first introduction to equity before I really understood what equity was, because school there is, I mean, just as it was when I was there, it was so non-existent. I mean, the things that you're coming home with was nothing. You were required to go, and if we think that we have a struggle in education here, I mean, it's even more so in that space. And then even in private schools, because when you're here, you can theoretically, if you have the money, jump into a private school and everything's great. But even the private schools still have a lot of the same struggles because of the economy. And I mean, it's a bigger situation that sits inside of a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I saw that I absolutely adored was the educators who were there were 100% in 100% of the time. It was never, they were there on purpose, and they were there intentionally, and they were there every day. And there was educators that I met that worked for cinder blocks because that's what their house was built out of.
Yeah.
So every week, at the end of every week, they would get a cinder block.
Wow. Here's
what they would take home, and they would build their house one piece at a time. But I think what I really took home with it and what has been resonating with me and what I use in so much of everything I talk is intention.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not here intentionally, if you're not here on purpose, and if you're not here every day because you choose to be, then you need to leave. And I know that can be controversial because there are days that I don't want to participate in the thing you're having, right? And I mean, and we all have that. But if there's at some point when you're no longer doing this intentionally, then maybe that's time for you to explore another option. And it's not to say that you can't have bad days and where the children want to make you like scratch your eyeballs out, right? Because I've experienced that too. But I think if you're experiencing this consistent where you're just not here intentionally anymore, then it's time to, you know, try something different. But I think seeing intentionality walked out in such, purity is the word that comes to mind. Like seeing it walked out with such purity changes the whole definition of the word for me and kind of changes this scope of what an educator who's there on purpose and for cinder blocks.
Right. You're there to build your home, right? Like, you're, that's amazing.
There to build your home,
right? Yeah. Right. I mean, that's amazing. So let me then, that kind of takes me to, you know, there has been what the stats that I heard on a previous podcast of mine was 8% of teachers are dropping out, and another 20% ish, it's been estimated, that are looking, then the college preparation programs, which I know there's Teach for America and all these other awesome programs, are dropping as well. How do we do this? How do we keep the people there intentionally?
You know, that's the question, right? And, you know, I think I'm going to give my answer that comes back to every single question that you ask. But I feel like the answer to kind of all of these is what is our relationship with the teachers that are coming in, and how are we supporting them in a holistic manner, right? I mean, but also, if we're asking these teachers to come in and support our students holistically, there's two pieces of that I really have seen in places that I've worked that are missing. One, they're not being supported holistically, and two, they're not trained in how to support holistically. I mean, that's a whole different ball game, right? You can be trained how to teach math and teach English and assess and do all those types of things. But if you're being then asked to assess a child in a holistic manner and to create a trauma-informed environment and understand what psychological safety is all about, that's a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to ask that of teachers, which I feel like is starting to be asked more and more of teachers, right? You're being asked to be a counselor and an educator and a, you know, academic educator on both sides. Then we need to do two things. One, provide that type of environment for them from their leadership. How are they being supported holistically? And to give them the tools that they need to be able to do that, and then support them in that, because that's emotionally draining. I mean, that takes a lot. I mean, you're doing it every day. I mean, that takes a lot from you to support these people in that way. And then how are teachers being supported? And I mean, I think it's a huge, it all comes back to the relationship with the educators, how they're being supported and the tools that they're being given to kind of thrive inside of these new expectations that are being put on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you. Cause it is my side gig here, that I'm working on and in my consulting and different things like that. That's really a piece that keeps me going, because this is sort of therapy, I'll be honest. Thank you. But well, also checks in the mail. So the other thing though is when you do see those positives, those things that happen, right? You know, I connected a young kid with a musical engineer that he was like, he's thinking about, hey, I want to do music. And when you see that connection happen, and he gets back to you and he's like, H man, like, I now understand what I need to buy. Now I can go get a job and try to figure out how to save for it. Like, that's, and I think as we all talk as innovators, we feed off of those really positive, positive, things like that. And then also, you know, there's difficulties out there, and sometimes we have to check ourselves, right? I have to check myself all the time, because, you know, like you said there, like, okay, so I'm teaching, I feel tough, tired today, but I have all my bricks, you know, like, oh my gosh. So when you put those things in perspective, you really do feel lucky. So I appreciate that. I appreciate your journey. What could go wrong? Where can people find you? I believe you have a podcast. You go streaming all the time. You're on LinkedIn. You're on Clubhouse. I'm making you tired telling you all the places you are, right? But you are all in. So how can people contact you and figure out and learn more and maybe even use some of your services?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite place to hang out is LinkedIn. So if you're looking for like where to find me and to see, like, this is the real Chelsea, and I don't know that I want to work with her because she seems a little crazy, or I really want to work with her because she seems a little crazy, then LinkedIn is the place to go. That's kind of my jam. I have a streaming show called What Could Go Wrong Live, and we stream on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch, which is fun. We do that every week, and we never do it at the same time because, you know, why not? So just to keep you guys on your toes, but we just started turning that into a podcast.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. And then, I mean, the place to hang out with me is LinkedIn, and every once in a while I go on Clubhouse, but I'm just trying to keep up with with a couple of 17 things at a time, you know, like the rest of us. But yeah, LinkedIn is my jam. So definitely find me there. That's the coolest place. And if you're not on LinkedIn, you should be, because that's where the cool kids hang out.
Right. It is amazing. There's an education revolution going on there.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fantastic. Chelsea, I can't thank you enough for just what could go wrong on this podcast. But you're an amazing person. You have a lot of energy. I love your story. I had no idea you graduated in 2 years, and I've told kids that. I'm so geeked. But I want to thank you so much for taking some time out and joining us on Disrupt Education.
This was awesome. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you all for listening, watching. We'll catch you next time on Disrupt Education.